In India, tales of Vaitalas, ghoul-like build...
Ghost building!
Dude, that's awesome. I think that the effect of reading half of Uzumaki, like, mere minutes before you try to hold a coherent conversation is your brain is fucking mush.
Hey, wait till
we're like, ghost building makes sense at this point. Welcome to the Pretty Dead Media Corner. It's where me and Max talk about stuff that we like and...
bonus.
Yeah. This time around, we're talking about a comic. Now, comics...
What are you rushing into this for? How you doing, man? You doing well? You having a good time?
Yeah, I'm good. We just recorded this right after recording our episode, so I just forgot to ask
like,
how...
It's like fucking wrestling. Like, keep up the illusion.
Keep up the kayfabe.
Yeah. We got a nice candle lit over there with some cedar and tobacco scents.
Yeah, you did set a mood here in the Pre-Dead Boys studio, and I did not appreciate that, so...
Oh, you didn't like that?
I apologize. No, I just underappreciated it. I rushed.
Okay, okay.
And I should have not rushed. I should have taken it in.
You know who else didn't rush today? The Bears defense.
Don't remind me. Khalil Mack, you're a disappointment. I'm disappointed in you, my son. My baby boy. My sweet child. I love you so much, but I'm very disappointed in you. We're not here to talk about football,
thank
though,
God.
Because that's for jocks. And we're going to be a couple of nerds
assholes.
And talk about
basketball
a comic book.
And baseball. Comic books.
Yeah, sports are disappointing, and we find solace today in comics. And we're finally getting down with our weeaboo roots. And talking about a manga.
Do you remember, like, in Terror Management Theory when we talked about the Winter Olympics and Yuri on Ice?
Yes.
Yeah, it's coming full circle, man. We've done it.
We did it.
Yeah.
It only took us 18 episodes, but we finally admitted that we're both nerds and that we're going to talk about comics and anime.
Hell yeah.
Manga.
Manga.
Yes. That's the Japanese word for comics. For those who don't know.
It's 2018, man. Anyone who listens to podcasts knows what a manga is.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
We have both read Uzumaki.
Uzumaki.
Uzumaki is a book by Junji Ito. Uzumaki follows a high school teenager, Kairi Goshima, her boyfriend, Shuichi Saito, and the citizens of the small fictional Japanese town of Kurozu-cho. You know what Kurozu-cho means in Japanese? Means
no
black vortex town.
Oh,
which I guess that's lost on you if you're an English reader, but if you're reading this in Japanese, you probably should have known what was going to happen by the end, huh?
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like have you seen Troll 2?
No, I haven't.
They live in a town called Nilbog, and the big reveal is that Nilbog is just goblin backwards, and they're like, no, and it's like, really? You never fucking...
You didn't write it out and maybe take a look at it? Well, in Kurozu-cho, it is cursed by supernatural events involving spirals. As the story progresses, Kairi and Shuichi witness how the spiral curse affects the people around them, causing the citizens to become obsessed or paranoid about spirals. And it takes some interesting twists and turns, and we'll get to those. We'll get to those after the spoiler warning break. But before we get to that, so this was published originally in a magazine in Japan called Big Comic Spirits.
Cool.
And I just want to take this opportunity to chastise all of Western magazines for not having a name as cool as Big Comic Spirits.
Yeah. You said like Detective Comics.
Yeah.
And Boy's Life.
That's lame.
Boring.
It's weak. Big Comic Spirit. And then later it was collected and eventually into like the one volume collection that Max and I are currently holding. It was collected in 2000. But before that, it was three volumes.
Uh-huh.
Before that, every chapter was in an individual issue of this magazine.
Sure.
Do you have any impressions of the format? It starts out pretty episodic where each chapter is like a contained little story.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about it before, and it's interesting to kind of see how the first, like, seven or so chapters kind of follow the overarching story. You know, it follows the story of these two and kind of the development of the curse. And then in the middle, it seems like it goes off the rails for a little bit. And it just gets into these little, like, body horror, like, vignettes. Where it just seems like these little stories that are outrageous and super creepy. And then it ends and it's like, oh, yeah, that was weird. it's kind of goofy.
Yeah. I kind of got the impression reading it that Junji Ito, the author and artist, wasn't quite sure if he was going to get to a big grand finale.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he was just knowingly like, these are really freaky stories. I might get canceled.
Yeah.
We're going to take this 1 week at a time and see how it goes. But clearly he, you know, built up enough faith with Big Comic Spirit and built toward a big epic ending.
Yeah.
So, without further ado, we're going to get into spoiler territory. And this is, you know, I'm usually of the opinion that if something is quote-unquote spoiled for you, then it probably wasn't that good in the first place. But I will say, if you have not read all of Uzumaki, do yourself a favor and sit down with it and just go on the wild ride and let this book take you where it takes you. Because it is...
Jarring?
It's very jarring. It's very weird. It's unexpected enough. There's definitely foreshadowing placed in there in some key parts, but it's just such a fun read, and I can't recommend enough. Like, it's most enjoyable if you're going in blind and don't really know what it's about. So
yeah. Well, it's about spirals.
It's about spirals, but it gets wild. So if you haven't read it yet, go ahead and turn this podcast off. Treat yourself.
Yeah, it's great. Get it from your library.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Or support your local independent comic store.
Yes, your FLCS. I think that's the acronym that a lot of people use, the Friendly Local Comic Book Store.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I saw that on the internet like twice, so I think people it's say it. Yes. Okay, now we're officially in spoiler territory.
Before we get into this, do you want to talk about how we were introduced to this like simultaneously? How'd you find out about this?
I knew about Junji Ito's work basically ever since it was maybe 2004 or something. Just some friends were passing around a link to one of his short stories, The Enigma at Amigara Fault.
Oh, you texted me about that.
Which is very great. And it's, if you haven't read it, you should read that one too. It's a really good intro to Junji Ito and short story. It's a super freaky comic. I was like, what the fuck? And real fun and weird.
Yeah.
So I knew about his work, but I never got around to reading his longer form stuff until now.
Yeah.
It always been in the back of my mind. I went to a comic book store a couple weeks ago to pick up my friend Matt and Lisa's comic book, Long Lost.
Optioned.
Should totally go read it. And it's about to be turned into a TV show now. So catch up on the comics before the TV show comes out. Congratulations, Matt and Lisa. That's awesome. But while I was there, I was like, hey, maybe I want to pick up another book. And I saw they had the collected volume of Uzumaki. And I was like, it's time. It's time for me to digest this whole thing.
Yeah.
I told you this after you told me, you were like, hey, have you heard of this book, Uzumaki? I just picked it up from the library. It looks really interesting. Was it just basically you saw it on the shelf or how did you?
No, I was getting my hair cut. And my barber and I were talking about books and the kind of stuff we were reading. And... yeah, Paul was just like, yeah, I gave this book to, I think he gave it to his girlfriend or something, or his girlfriend recommended it to him. But he was like, it's just a horror comic. And I think, like, we were talking about House of Leaves, and that's how it came up, because I was like, oh, yeah, you read House of Leaves, and you have to kind of, like, spin the book around as you're reading it. And he was like, yeah, there's this comic that's about spirals called Uzumaki. And I think I had the reaction a lot of people do, where it's like, it's just like a fucking spiral, like, rolls through the town. Like,
does that mean that it's about spirals?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that kind of caught me is like, that sounds so pedestrian. That sounds very boring. What's the horror in that?
Right.
So I reserved it at the library. I reserved it at work and it came in and I was just flipping through on the shelf. First off, the collected hardback is beautiful.
Yeah.
The binding is really beautiful. It's like a black cover with some gray design, but then the spine is just a screaming reanimated child zombie thing. And so you pick it up and you know that you're kind of in for a ride.
Yeah, quick shout out, man. Viz Media, they've been putting out manga since God knows when, probably the 80s. They are the reason why we have so much of this stuff in Western culture. They have been knocking it out of the park with their book design lately. It used to just exclusively be, you know, paperback, buy them by a dozen stuff. Trades. Yeah. And I feel like there's so many collected volumes that they've been putting out that really look visually impressive and are good pieces of book design. So just it's a nice little extra thing when you're browsing shelves of books when you see this thing literally screaming at you.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So the book starts out with almost these vignette sort of chapters. They're individual, seemingly completely self-contained stories that almost have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
Other than Shuichi and Kairi seem to be appearing randomly in there.
Yeah. They're just dating. They're teens.
Yeah. They're teens dating. Starts out like a lot of horror does.
Yeah.
Tell me about what were some chapters in those individual stories that stuck out at you or anything you thought was interesting or fun?
I think it's cool how quickly it ratchets up from like 1 to 15.
Yeah.
Because it starts and, you know, they're just kind of dating and Shuichi sees the dad and he's just looking at a snail on a wall.
Yeah, Kairi finds him.
Or Kairi does, yeah.
Yeah.
So she just sees Shuichi's dad looking at a snail, and she's like, hey, what's up? And he doesn't react.
Right.
And she's like, that's weird. And then just keeps going about her day. And then Shuichi is like, well, my dad is obsessed with spirals. It's crazy. And you're like, all right, that's cool. He collects a lot of spiral things. That's fine. And then like 10 pages later, he sticks his tongue out, and his tongue just turns into this big, gross spiral.
Right.
And then he kills himself by cramming himself into a basket in the form of a spiral and then comes back in the form of a centipede that's a big spiral. And this feels like it's revealing a lot, but this is like the first literally 50 pages.
This is the first chapter.
Yeah.
That this all happens.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's jarring.
Yeah. So it starts out real buck wild.
Yeah. Like body horror almost.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then what happens?
And then, so I thought this was really interesting. I read the first chapter or so in one go. So you can feel the thread that connects through. And it's like, okay, there's something sinister here that's kind of taking its course over the town. And they're cremating the bodies of the people who have died. And they're turning into spirals. And they're all sinking into this pond. And it's like, okay, something is going on here. We don't understand what yet. But there's something going on. And then it hits the section in the middle where it's just these little, like, almost Twilight Zone disconnected stories that happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's the couple that's in love, but their parents don't want them to be in love. And then there's the story of Jack in the Box. And then there's the Slug Kid story.
Right. And I love that all of these have something that I think is pretty common throughout Junji Ito's work. There's a logic within the stories. It's not totally surrealist horror where there's no discernible logic of any kind.
Yeah.
But it's also not the Blumhouse movies that are coming out now where there has to be a logical explanation for why the supernatural horror is what it is and like what you need to do to find the weird demon in Insidious and his weird sewing machine basement.
Yeah.
Defeat him. Like,
they're very poetic.
Yeah.
They all have this sense of like poetic justice to them.
For sure. And, you know, you can see Ito sets up the story and will like kind of explain what needs to happen early on in a chapter without giving away the whole farm.
Yeah.
Like he gives you enough information that you're locked in and engaged with the story because there is a sense that can be grasped from it.
Uh-huh.
And it's cool to see that carried out through the whole story where eventually, these seemingly random one-off stories do kind of, you realize they're all kind of connected to one ongoing thing.
Yeah. And I think it's then when the book kind of starts to switch from being like, okay, I get that this is about spirals, but it's also about way more than that. But the only way it can really be described is like, this town is cursed by spirals.
Yeah.
One of the creepiest ones is the Jack in the Box chapter, where it's about this kid who likes to jump out from behind things and scare people. you know, it's kind of, he's just like a goofy little kid who's trying to like kind of stalk
Kyrie.
Yeah,
he's pigtail pulling. He's doing the, like,
yeah,
he doesn't know how to talk to girls.
Yeah,
so he knows, like, that he likes one.
It's so, like, boo.
Yeah, and he says boo and jumps out and scares her, and also says things like, I won't give up, Kyrie. You'll go out with me eventually.
Yeah, this fucking kid, man.
He's such a fuckboy.
Yeah. But, like, this whole chapter kind of starts, and then he gets mercilessly run over by a car.
Oh, not just that. He says, what do I have to do to show you that I love you? I know. I saw this in a movie once. And he jumps out in front of the car.
Yeah. Eventually, he sends her a gift, or he sent her a gift before he dies.
Yep.
And she opens it, and she keeps hearing this, like, this voice that's like, Kyrie, Kyrie. And she realizes that it's, you know, something supernatural going on with this gift he sent her. So her and Shuchi are like, well, we have to go dig up the grave. So they go to exhume this kid's body from his coffin.
It's a jack-in-the-box, by the way, this gift.
Yeah, the gift is a jack-in-the-box.
Yeah, so it's like a little spring-loaded toy, and you're like, haha, I get it, because they call this kid jack-in-the-box. Like, again, there's that internal logic where you're like, yeah, he's a spring-loaded
toy. I can see the theme here,
toy.
Yeah.
But yeah, go on.
And then they go to exhume his body, and it, like, pops out of the coffin, and it turns out that, like, the spiral spring that's, like, a part of the car that killed him was lodged in his spine, and his corpse is, like, bouncing through the graveyard, chasing them around and screaming. And it's, like, one of the most unsettling things I've ever seen.
Yes.
But it's how Ito keeps pulling in this spiral, you know? The coil of the car is a spiral that's propelling this body at them.
Right. It's so horrific.
Yeah.
That is the aforementioned boy screaming on the spine.
Yeah.
It's old Jack in the Box.
Ugh.
You know, my favorite kind of at least seemingly one-off unrelated story was the snail where...
The snail's so gross, man.
It is. It basically starts out, there's this weird kid, Katayama. He's late to class. And
well, he doesn't even come to class if it's not raining. They say that at one point. Yeah, like, he won't be in class today.
That's a fair point. Yeah. I didn't even notice that. But he shows up late to class, and they're like, the teacher's like, where have you been? This other kid, Sumura, roasts him real hard and is being a big old asshole to him.
He's like the school bully.
Yeah, he's wisecracking, and he's stupid. He's got buck teeth, and he's just a real jerk, and I hate him.
Yeah, he sucks.
So this kid is just late to everything, and he misses a shot in volleyball, and, Sumura calls him a glacial turd and shoves him up against the wall. They bully this kid.
Yeah.
And they strip him naked and throw him out in the hallway.
Yeah.
And he slivers off. Presumably because, like, you read this story and you're like, okay, this kid's just bullied basically because he's kind of he's not an athletic kid, so he's just getting bullied because he's not cool. But throughout, it's like, okay, he doesn't show up to school unless it's raining. He needs moisture. He's kind of slimy all the time for some reason.
He's very slow to react to things.
He's very slow. When he is bullied and stripped and thrown out into the hallway, he literally slivers along the ground. There's all these things put
in place.
Oh my god,
every time they illustrate Katayama, he's got this just like, he is wet. He's moist boy.
He's slimy, yeah. And that's another thing, like, not only are these clues in the narrative in each of these chapters where Ito is kind of being like, do you get it? Do you see where I'm going? He also draws these things, and you can start to see where he's going with the story pretty early on. This is not completely out of the blue jump scare type horror. He's setting it
very
up and you're
slow
like,
burn, yeah.
You if you know like his style, you can probably read his stuff knowing like, alright, this kid's gonna turn into a snail.
Yeah.
And it's almost when you start to feel like it's getting kind of predictable that you turn the page and he literally has a bulging back that pages later turns into a snail shell, and it's within two pages of that he literally, like, the next day in class, slithers on the ground with a giant snail shell on his back and he's leaving a slime trail with him.
Yeah.
The other students are screaming, horrified, and jumping out of their seats. The pacing is so good with Ito. There's especially a lot of manga where it seemed like they had to hit a page count, or I know the case with Akira Toriyama, the guy who made the Dragon Ball manga, like a lot of times he was hitting a page count to try and like appease editors of magazines. But Ito doesn't function that way. He's moving at a clip. And then this kid turns into a snail and is sliming the walls.
And the spiral is his shell.
Right.
And that's where the spiral from there keeps coming in. And you feel like the people of this town feel where there's this oppressive spiral. And everywhere you look, everything bad that happens has a spiral come up in some weird way.
Right.
You know?
And I don't know about you, but I kind of felt as I was reading it, like, is this just going to be a bunch of unrelated stories that's just a motif?
Yeah.
It doesn't really become clear that there is an overarching story and that's leading to a conclusion that ties it all together until the last third of the series.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the snail is definitely my favorite one-off story. It's super gross and it goes some weird places by the end of it.
Ugh.
And you find out that the snail thing comes up later too. That plays a pretty central role in some of the drama that happens late in the book.
Yeah.
And so here's a summary from Wikipedia of basically the conclusion of the book. And goes without saying that this is ultimate final form spoiler territory.
Yeah.
Kairi and Shuichi devise a plan to escape Kurozucho, but when they attempt to escape, their efforts are unsuccessful. After returning to the town, they discover that several years have passed since they left, as time speeds up away from the spiral. The other citizens have expanded the terraced houses until they connect into a single structure forming a spiral pattern.
It's almost like a black hole.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Kairi and Shuichi decide to search for Kairi's parents, which brings them to the center of the spiral. At the center, they fall down a pit, within which they discover the corpses of Kairi's parents and an ancient city completely covered with spiral patterns. Shuichi urges Kairi to move forward and find a way to stop the curse, but she replies that she does not have the strength and wishes to stay with him. The two embrace each other and their bodies twist and warp together as a result of the curse. As they lie together, Kairi notes that the curse ended at the same time it began, for just as time speeds up away from the center, it freezes at the center and concludes that the curse is eternal and all the events will repeat when a new Kurozucho is built where the previous one laid. So the first half of the book is definitely body horror. That's kind of the primary genre of horror. It's abjection. It's people kind of becoming...
contortion.
Yeah, becoming different objects or turning into snails or...
Coiling together like two snakes.
Yeah, lots of bizarre stuff that's just basically this weird body horror. And it segues into cosmic horror.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Junji Ito did make a big deal, like, talking about how much he was inspired by H.P. Lovecraft.
Uh-huh.
And it's such an interesting way to take all of these seemingly disparate elements and channel it into one big conclusion that's, like, it's this eternal city that keeps rebuilding
well, and do you remember,
sucking itself into a spiral.
Yeah, and you remember our zombie episode where we talked about how one of the kind of main fears that comes along with zombie horror is the fear of the eternal.
Yes.
And that definitely plays into this, where it's this infinite kind of recursive, you know, because the thing is, a spiral is could continue forever. It just kind of uncoils and uncoils and uncoils, and it draws everything towards the center. And that's kind of where the book leaves you at the end, is this is just an infinite cycle that can't be broken out of.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's this kind of end game of eventually this will consume everything and there's no way to warn anybody about it. It's just eternity and it's just what's going to happen. And it's bleak.
yeah, for sure. That's a good point. It's like it would have been almost welcome relief to just die.
Yeah.
As bleak as that is. But nobody is afforded that opportunity. Even like they try to escape the city in so many different ways. So many different characters try to escape. and they can't. Whether it's the reporter who is trying to run down this endless tunnel that eventually starts contorting, or they try to just walk through the hills and end up walking around in spirals.
Yeah.
It's freakish and super concerning. And when they're stuck inside, they are starving and can't find food and
yeah,
turn into snails and other people eat them. And
yeah,
it's just a lot of suffering, ongoing suffering.
Yeah, it's very much a grind.
Yeah. I see a lot of differences between Asian horror, Eastern horror stories, and a lot of the stuff that we have here in sure. Western culture.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's interesting to talk about, because the easy way to deal with that is, I think a lot of people, whether they read Uzumaki or they watch The Ring or The Grudge, the conclusion is just kind of, oh, it's weird. And they kind of just leave it at that, is it's just surreal and unexplainable. But I think a lot of people don't get to that point where they're talking about like the motif of the spirals and like that tying into what you were talking about with never dying.
Yeah.
You know, eternal life and eternal suffering. I guess, like, do you see differences between Eastern and Western storytelling?
So I don't have a ton of familiarity with a lot of Eastern stuff. I've watched The Ring, and I've read, I didn't finish Akira, but I know you love Akira.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with a thing like Akira as well, there's the kind of environmental message that overlays the whole thing. And a lot of that was, who wrote that?
That was Kazuhiro Otomo.
Yeah. But kind of grappling with the changes that were happening in Japan with street gangs and, you know, technology expanding and environmental suffering, I guess.
Yeah.
But it really kind of happens in this way that it does force you to kind of look allegorically. Because if you look at it just on a surface level, it's almost the same plot as Watchmen.
Hmm.
You know, where like a city is destroyed by a giant monster. And it's something like that.
Interesting, yeah.
But in Watchmen, it's character driven. You know, it's like,
right,
Ozymandias created that to unite mankind and get everyone together. But then you're seeing how the different characters are kind of grappling with that horror that's been created. And with Akira, it's very much allegorical, almost worldwide storytelling of that. Would you agree?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting comparison that I've never thought of. You're right. Like Watchmen and Akira, basically the same sorts of things. And a lot of the same issues are in there.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, instead of the clowns, they have the top knots.
Yeah.
But it's kind of similar social issues in there.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less heavy-handed in Akira than, you know, Alan Moore just blabbing it up.
Yeah. Everything is super dark and super violent.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. And in my kind of broad, you know, opinion, and, you know, you take this for what it is, we're two boys that make a podcast that are just gabbing about this stuff. We're not scholars anything.
Yeah.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts and theories too. But I think that a lot of it comes down to, we are Westerners and we have grown up in a lot of basically theistic thought. We have a sure. lot of beliefs in one kind of central god and a very strong tie to the concept of good versus evil.
Sure.
And if you think about Watchmen, here's some spoilers for Watchmen. Good and evil are a kind of difficult thing to navigate throughout that.
Yeah, it's blurred.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that the heroes, who are supposed to be the paragon of good guys, they're complicated. They do various things. The comedian is supposed to kind of be a good guy, but he also tried to rape someone.
And he's also establishing juntas all over Central America.
Yeah, like he does very despicable things. And yeah. Rorschach is supposed to be a good guy, but he's also a vigilante and like just ruthlessly beating the shit out of people. It's very gray.
And you can say that a lot of comic books that have gone the Watchmen route have been ruined because it gets super overwrought.
Yeah.
But Watchmen is good.
Yeah.
Because it was very the first, much so. You know? Yeah.
It's very worth reading if you haven't.
Yeah.
I think like if you take a literature course that has any comics in it, you've almost certainly read it.
Yeah.
By now. But it's a good book. And it's interesting because how does that end? Basically with the introduction of a universally evil force that the entire world can unite in fighting.
Yeah.
That's the big plan that's hatched by Ozymandias.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, Watchmen is a story about good and evil, but unlike something like Star Wars, where it's just the line is drawn very clearly, what is good, what is evil. And you
one side wears white, the other side wears black.
Yeah, you can tell by the color of their lightsabers. It's so, you know, moral ambiguity is not really thoroughly explored as much as we would like it to be in Star Wars. Uh-huh. It's not. It's very black and white.
Yeah.
While Watchmen does a really good job of kind of poking at that in different ways and playing with that dynamic. And even the ending, it's supposed to be a move where it clarifies where the line is between good and evil. But even then you're left with a kind of like, was that really, is that
the
really
best choice? Yeah.
Yeah. It's ambiguous, but those deal with the same theme. They play in the same sort of sandbox thematically because they are Western stories.
Yeah. The duality.
Yes. I still watch a lot of anime and manga and foreign films in general that do not have such a focus on good versus evil. And I think Uzumaki has that. I think Akira has that, where they don't really seem interested in trying to talk about good versus evil.
Yeah.
And I think that that probably comes from them being stories told by people that grew up within more pantheistic cultures.
Uh-huh.
Right? They did historically have grown up not with the Judeo-Christian ideals that Western culture has had. They have grown up primarily with Hinduism and Buddhism and other ideas where we should not view the world so much as good versus evil, but we should view everything as part of one collective whole.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, like, in Watchmen, for example, you have the good guys and the bad guys, and the kind of tension there comes because those lines are being blurred and it's gray.
Yep.
Whereas in a lot of Japanese and Eastern stuff in general, it's because good and evil complement each other and work together in, like, the super overwrought yin-yang design, you know? Like,
right.
Good has its purpose and dark has its... Or light and dark both have their purposes in the kind of cyclical nature of reality and the universe, that you kind of have to figure out how to carve out your place in that space.
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. But it also just seems like that's not... What is good and evil is not really a primary concern of a lot of these stories. For example, in Akira, a lot of people get frustrated with the end of Akira. A lot of people watch it and they're like, what the hell happened? because it didn't end with the good guy beating the bad guy, or even the bad guy beating the good guy. You're like, I guess ostensibly Kaneda is the good guy and Tetsuo is the bad guy. But if you think about it, Tetsuo is not... He was experimented on by a government.
Yeah, it's not really his will.
Yeah, but was the government evil or good? There were parts that were caused suffering for other people, and other parts where they seemed concerned about the greater good, but it's still like they worked in tandem with each other.
Yeah.
It's blurred. It's blurred across the board. And Akira's big conclusion is basically it comes back to being about the friendship between Kaneda and Tetsuo as they were kids and growing up together.
Yeah.
And Tetsuo is gone and becomes just part of existence and is snuffed out, essentially.
Yeah.
It's because I don't think a lot of Asian storytelling is nearly as concerned about where the lines of good and evil are as Western storytelling.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think that that's really interesting when it comes to horror, as in the case of Uzumaki, where I think we still, a lot of our horror stories here in the West are like slasher movies, serial killers, or maybe there's malevolent forces like a monster movie.
Monster stuff like is bad. It. There is an other.
Yes. Uzumaki, it's basically like what you find out at this conclusion is that this is just a process that goes on infinitely.
Yeah.
And people literally assimilate into this underground spiral kingdom.
Yeah.
And throughout the entire story, there's hints of that happening. People turning into, you know, clay pottery, or people into snails.
The cremated bodies turning into spirals of smoke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's people just kind of turning into things. And if body horror comes from abjection, the idea of like someone losing the boundaries between what is self and what is other,
uh-huh.
and they kind of blend together, you know?
Yeah.
Like a like the fly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, fly. Yeah.
You lose track of what's Brundle and what's fly. It becomes all mushed up and
a big disturbing. Jeff Goldblum monster.
Yeah, you're like, no, I like my Jeff Goldblum and my fly separate.
Yeah, I will take the full body Jeff Goldblum any day.
Yeah. And the horror comes from, ew, you're mashing those two things together. You're taking away the line between those things.
Exactly, yeah.
And Uzumaki is about that. That is, it's not just a spiral is drawn in all of these chapters. It's that there's this ongoing motif of things losing their distinction between self and other.
Uh-huh.
Everything is eventually assimilating into this inevitable spiral thing. And it never gets fully explained, and it's horrifying. It's,
yeah.
It's this deep existential dread that comes out of what seemed to just be weird little body horror stories.
Yeah, and I think the existential part of it is that it's not anybody's fault.
Yeah.
They just live there.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the environment's fault. There's nothing malicious. It's not like the Earth even needs a spiral to power something, you know? It's just like, this is just a weird thing that happens in this 10 square mile little blip of land.
Yeah.
And these people just unfortunately live there. And it happens to them, and it sucks. But there's not like a cause or a right or a wrong. And I think that's why it frustrates a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know? No one's at fault.
Right. Yeah, and it's horrifying and it sticks with you because there's still a little bit of that internal logic. Like, it's a thing that, like, it's going somewhere and it makes sense on its own level without it being fully explained. And I think a lot of times, like, you do see a lot of stories try to have that, oh, what's going on? It's a mysterious force sort of theme.
Yeah.
And they don't handle it nearly as well as Uzumaki does because it's just like, I don't care about the nun. I don't care that there's just this nun.
I see it, yeah.
It doesn't really have, like, a sound internal logic. That's
sure.
a lot. That's, like, kind of a problem that I think is really common in a lot of modern American horror movies, where it's like, I don't care to get invested in this because it's not going anywhere. It just seems like you're making stuff up on the fly. And Junji Ito does a good job of, like, he calls his shots. He's like, oh, isn't that weird that the dad is staring at a snail? Oh, it's because of a spiral.
Yeah.
When in fact, that might actually be a hint at the human beings turning into snails. And it's a foreshadowing of a lot of elements that aren't just that he likes to draw a spiral. It's that he's going somewhere with this grand story of, like, where all of these elements are going to come together.
Yeah. And I think the kind of clues that he drops, you mentioned it before, but, like, this is a motif-heavy book. Like, it's the spirals, and it's the wind, and the lighthouse shows up in the very beginning, because they're like, oh, we live in this town, and there's a lighthouse over there, and then there's the lighthouse chapter.
Right.
And then, you know, if you're trying to leave the town, the lighthouse becomes a central point as they're trying to leave the town. And there's this kind of inability to escape this thing. And, like, I think part of the horror of the lighthouse chapter is they're, like, going up these spiraling staircases, but also the lighthouse is spinning its central beam mm-hmm. in kind of a spiral as well. And it's this kind of, like, just this recursion of spirals that draws you in more and more. And then it gets to, like, the houses that they're building at the end are kind of pointing towards the whole ground turning into this big sinkhole and drawing people down more and more.
Right.
Like, the levels of recursion in this are remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it kind of fractals out beyond just visual cues.
Yeah, it's very fractaled.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it goes like, he's staring at the snail, and then the snail has a spiral shell, and then people are turning into snails. And why are people turning into snails? Because they have to go underground.
Right.
Like, all that stuff. It's really, really neat.
It's such an intentional story.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, and I, like, went back and looked for that lighthouse, and I forgot what's the second thing that happens to Kairi right at the beginning of the first chapter. A cyclone passes by her, and it kind of freaks her out.
Yeah.
And it's crazy when you read the third to last chapter, when the cyclones are like a form of warfare between people that they're like manipulating, like, and attacking each other. Yeah. With. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this quote from Junji Ito.
Does he like this? He's like
This is one of... I think it's, like, the most iconic... Like, it is the typical Junji Ito work, and I think he kind of likes it that way.
Okay,
he definitely put a lot into it.
Cool.
So he started out wanting to tell a story about strange stories that would happen to people living in a long traditional terrace house
in Japan. Great TV show.
Yeah. But I guess he grew up in a house similar to the long houses that come up over and over again.
Which, if you're unfamiliar, it's a very long rectangle.
Yeah.
And you would live, instead of living in apartments that are stacked on one another, you would have dividers, you know, like every 50 feet of the rectangle, and that would be one house, and then you would have another divider, and another family would live there, and then you would have another divider.
Yeah.
And it's just like a segmented, almost like a caterpillar.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, for sure. It just kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
And he was really fascinated by that. And during the process of, like, finding a way to draw a long building, he started getting obsessed with the shape of a mosquito coil. And saw, like, that's a very long thing that coils. And he decided he could make that building long by drawing it as a spiral.
Uh-huh.
And then he was like, okay, what are some books about spirals? What are theories about spirals? How have spirals been used in art and culture and in mythology? And he just went down this rabbit hole, like, geeking out about spirals. He sought inspiration by staring at spirals, researching spirals, creating spiral patterns by draining water from bathtubs, eating foods with spiral patterns.
Jeez.
And raising snails. He got real into raising snails. And it's funny because he has, like, at the end of this volume, it includes a comic that was just kind of a one-off
thing.
But that's actually true, that part where he's talking about how obsessed he got with spirals.
Yeah.
He really just launched into this weird, like, before he had a story idea about spirals and infecting a town, he just got way into spirals. That was just, you know, some people, you know, collect something or they start a gym routine.
Yeah.
Or just get into some normal hobby. And he was like, no, spirals are my thing, dude.
But I think that lends to a lot of, like, intentionality, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is his thing, you know? And he was in, like, it's like bonsai almost, where you are cultivating something, like with the snails, you're cultivating something over a long period of time that requires a lot of intentional work that may not be, like, the traditional sense of fruition.
Yeah.
And I think, like, kind of where we can make the parallel with death there is, like, in America, stuff is very rapid. You know, you need to see fruition from something. You need to keep climbing the corporate ladder or whatever. But in Japanese philosophy, something is as good as the intent you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why something like bonsai, where you are cultivating this very specific tree that has a very specific style that is also, like, not hardy. Like, a bonsai can die easily, and then it's like you lost 60 years of work. But again, that's not the point. The point is not to prove something to the world. It's to kind of cultivate your own soul and your own, like, your own intent, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not motivated by a selfish greed where you're like, I'm cultivating this thing because it's going to be lucrative.
Yeah.
It's more of a meditative process where, you know, you're investing in something and just going along with where it goes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it plays into the theme of a bunch of people going crazy because of their obsession with spirals.
Yeah.
Plays into it pretty well if the guy who wrote and drew it was obsessed with spirals.
Was also dealing with this.
It's interesting. I love to... He said this in an interview. Usually spiral patterns mark characters' cheeks in Japanese comedy cartoons, representing an effect of warmth. However, I thought it could be used in horror if I drew it a different way. So he was obsessed with spirals, and at some point he just kind of latched onto the idea of, like, spirals are used in these really cutesy, happy Japanese cartoons.
Sure.
What if I did something fucked up and weird with it?
Subverting the norm, yeah.
Yeah. And so he started working on Uzumaki.
Very cool.
So, Max, you work in a library.
I do.
I know you read a lot of books.
Uh-huh.
I feel like it seems like you pick up a lot of comic books too.
I do, yeah.
A fair amount of them. You usually have a couple graphic novels checked out when I come over here to record.
Uh-huh.
What do you think is different about the method of storytelling in comic as opposed to something like film? Like, a lot of people just draw the conclusions or draw the connections between film and comics so much that they're analogous.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are significant differences that you've seen between comics and other mediums?
Have we talked about Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud?
I know we have personally. I don't think we have on the podcast or anything.
Because in Understanding Comics, he talks about how so much of comics and the written word is pacing. You know, it's different than a movie, which forces you to move along with it. Like, you are going to be there for 2 hours, period. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, it's going to end at 2 hours and then it's done, you know? Whereas something like Uzumaki, there are chapters that read very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, there are points where it's pretty iconic. It's character driven. They're just having a conversation. And then there are other points where it dials into a very, very detailed image of, like, a man turned into a centipede wrapped in around on himself.
Yes.
And screaming. And the way comics are written is it forces you to pause on that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just be like, I just have to look at this for 7 more seconds and then the scene ends. It's like you have that in front of you and you are free to engage with that as much or as little as you want.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a cool thing that comics do, is it allows you to define how into the story you are willing to go, which makes sense with Uzumaki, because I know a thing that Junji Ito has talked about with it is part of the draw of the spiral is that it naturally draws everything towards the center.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer you kind of look at some of the things here, you find yourself being drawn towards the center of every spiral that he's drawing.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It lets you kind of explore this almost in like a mixed media way where the spirals are their own pieces of art inside the art of the page as a whole.
Yeah.
And you kind of can read them almost independently where like your eye is being drawn to them specifically, even though you're reading in, you know, the way that you're supposed to read a manga, you know, from like top to bottom and then right to left.
Right.
But your eye is being drawn to the spiral in like the bottom left as you're working your way down there through the text. You know, it's really, really cool.
Yeah. He's got such a great command of the page. Like, there's definitely, I feel like he does kind of condition you to look around like, there's a spiral. You see a spiral?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's good storytelling moments of that too.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that one of the most impressive things for me with Junji Ito specifically, I don't feel like anybody in the horror genre of comics has as good a grasp on the page turn being a significant
thing.
He is so good at like in the Jack in the Box chapter, for example, there's a scene where, you know, Kairi and Shuichi are going to dig up this kid's grave.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're like, we got to find out what's going on. As they're doing this, the panels get smaller and smaller as the story goes on. And they finally get to the point where they dig up the grave. There's a hole that pops up in the, like, where the head should be.
Uh-huh.
And it's starting to smell. They, like, rear back a little bit. And it's this tiny panel that says, bang, you turn the page, and it's, like, a half page of the rotting head peeking out of that hole. It's a super unsettling moment.
Yeah.
And there's also a contrast that he draws his main characters who are alive and healthy and well with, like, very minimal,
yeah, very clean
friendly
lines.
Line yeah. work, and these grotesque creatures are very detailed, and he gives you a lot of information of all the sliminess and texture of this rotting body. It's so good. There's points where I've kind of felt a little bit of that tension of like, something bad's about to happen, and I know when I turn the page, it's going to show me something.
Yeah.
Even the first chapter when Shuichi opens the basket, you know that it's like he's going to see his dad.
Something
his dad's
going to
be a spiral or some shit. But it's not until you turn the page and see the full page covered in the illustration of that grotesque,
the contortion. Yeah.
Yeah. he's such a master of, like, you get this feeling of you're going to get punished when you turn the page.
Yeah.
With some real spooky shit.
Yeah, and, like, I mentioned it earlier, but House of Leaves does that really well, too.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's, the book is paced where it's a tome, it's a dense book, but there'll just be these walls of text that run through the book at one point, and then it starts getting, like, fewer words per page. There'll be, like, 30 words a page, and then it's 10, and then, like, as the characters are kind of descending deeper and deeper into the house, and they're, like, fleeing from this terror that's behind them, it'll be, like, 3 words a page, and you're just flipping pages like mad, and it feels like you're running through the book with the characters. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Is that a good book? I just knew about a lot of the weird things that it does.
Yeah, it's well written. Yeah.
It's actually really well written.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, I'll have to read that at some point. Because it caught my eye when I worked at Barnes & Noble. It's like, what the hell is this book?
Uh-huh.
But I never got around to
different colors of text and all that.
Yeah, 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 it's wild design. I really like what this comic's creator and writer, scholar on comics, Sarah Horrocks, says about the mechanics of Junji Ito's work.
Sure.
She says, "What makes Uzumaki such a strong work is how precise it is in its mechanics. It is meticulous in the way that a curse might be. It is performative in its digressions and crescendos. It is a comic that knows how to let the beat build. It is functionally designed to work upon the reader's own natural inclinations as a comic book reader, and use those as a mechanism to spread the madness of the book out into the reader." I felt like that was true. And it sounds like House of Leaves does that. Like,
yeah.
You have an experience with this written book that, like, it kind of extends and you're...
It intrudes into your own life.
It creeps out.
Yeah.
You get the willies just thinking about stuff that happens in the book, and it hangs with you. And that makes it work even better in what it's trying to do as a story.
Yeah.
It's fantastic stuff. I don't know if you have... Did you have any other, like... anything stick out at you about Uzumaki that you want to talk about?
No, I think we hit a lot of it. It's such a good looking book. It's so cool. Like, there are these scenes at the end where it's so dense with detail that it almost feels like you're looking at this grayscale wall, but then it's actually just these designs that Junji Ito has drawn on everything.
Yeah.
And it's all super intentional. Like, it feels oppressively detailed at points.
Yeah. This was so clearly a labor of love for him.
Yeah.
And it really shows. It's so well done. You should read Uzumaki. It's incredible. Highly recommended. It's definitely one of my favorite comics. I kind of had to take a break from comics for a few years. I just got real burnt out. And this sucked me back in where I'm like, I want to read more Junji Ito. I want to read more of this stuff.
Yeah. And I think, like, we haven't done it justice either. Like, we've talked about it a lot. If you haven't read it,
oops,
like,
we spoiled it.
But, like, look at it, because the way it visually kind of assaults you and invades your own brain is really, really neat. It's really cool.
Yes, absolutely. That's a wrap. Tell us what you thought about this second bonus pre-dead media corner
PDMC
episode. Yep, that's right. We'd love to hear from you. Shout out at us at Pre-Dead Boys on social media, predeadboys@gmail.com on the email. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Yeah.